Welcome. I'm Jessica Teigen, and this is the Evolving to Exceptional podcast, where we talk about reaching peak performance in our workplaces, homes, and communities so that we can live our best life possible, an exceptional life. I want to welcome back our listeners to this week's episode of Evolving to Exceptional. We have a fantastic guest with us today, Julie Pham. She is the founder of Seven Forms of Respect and CEO of Curiosity Based, as well as a best-selling author, a keynote speaker, award-winning community leader. She's done amazing work, and I absolutely love her focus and her topic around the importance of respect. And I'm excited to hear more about that. But before we get into kind of those details in the episode, Julie, I'd love for you to give us a little bit of your background, your story, your why it is you do what you do, how you got to where you are. Just tell us a little bit more about who you are.
Jessica, thank you so much for inviting me to be on your podcast. I'm looking forward to this conversation. So I just have to share that a really important part of my identity is being a Vietnamese refugee, a Vietnamese boat person. So my parents and I came over when I was 2 months old. They started the first privately owned Vietnamese language newspaper in the Pacific Northwest. And why this is important is because I grew up with, I think of them as the hustlers among hustlers. And so I grew up in a very entrepreneurial family. And so even though my background is I'm trained as an academic, after college, I actually went on and got my PhD in history. I decided to leave academia after I finished my dissertation and go back to Seattle to help run the newspaper. And this was in 2008. So this is in the wake of the Great Recession. And this is when I actually started to do a lot of community building work. And I had never done that before because as academics don't really volunteer, don't really do community engagement. And I think of that as my real life MBA. So the 3 years that I worked at the newspaper, I learned a lot by bringing together people from really diverse backgrounds. And I had to make a lot of mistakes as well. And then after being there for 3 years, I'm working with 8 people. Half of them have the same last name as me. I need to move to a bigger organization. And so I ended up going into corporate tech, and I spent the next 9 years in tech. And then the last 6 years of that, I was at an organization, a nonprofit that advocated on behalf of the tech industry. And in a way, I feel like I got my second real life PhD in organizational development, because I ended up creating a cross-sector collaboration fellowship, bringing together people from tech, government, and community-based organizations. And that's when I could see, wow, some people are doing really well and some people are really struggling. And why is it what's the difference? And I was able to identify curiosity. And so it's just, oh, wow, if we can get people who are volunteering their time to do this, then imagine how we can apply what we're learning from community building to those who are actually paid to work together. And so that's when I decided to start my own company, Curiosity Based, in January 2021, in the middle of the pandemic. I left the best job I ever had, because truly, that was the best job I ever had, so that I could start my own company.
So tell us a little bit, or I'd love to learn just like a little bit more about what you do at Curiosity Based. Like, what is the focus and what, maybe why it is you wanted to start it, and what your purpose is or mission is as part of that company?
Yes. So we help people practice curiosity in the world, starting in the workplace, because that is where we spend most of our waking hours. And I know I've heard you say that work and home are one, right? And so that's why we know that if people feel bad at work, it's gonna go home. And so that's one part. Actually, one of the reasons why I started my company, though, was because I was doing a lot of work around diversity in tech in my previous work. And I realized a lot of those conversations have to do with recruitment and retention, with representation. And yet most management and leadership books are written by white men. Yep. And we actually did a study of this. and the recommended ones, I should say, the ones that are influential. And so the analogy I like to use is that of theater. We are changing the actors, and they are reading the same leadership scripts. And so one of the reasons why I wanted to start my company also was, how do we enlarge the pool of writers, of people? And so part of what Curiosity Based does is we actually help promote leadership authors, women, people of color, people with disabilities. So all of these different communities that are, and also honoring, hey, I think white male authors are great, right? And I just think that there's room for more. So there was the desire to help spread curiosity. And then there was also this kind of personal desire to help shape enlarge the narrative, the leadership narratives, to help advocate for that.
I love that. I love that concept, because we all know when there's greater diversity of perspective, we can get to better solutions, better answers, things that we wouldn't have come up with before. And one of the areas that I think it's so important to have that diversity of perspective, and I love that you're talking about that in terms of who's writing the different leadership and management books, is that AI is reading all of that, right? Mm-hmm. AI is taking in all of that information. And so if there isn't written content that provides a diversity of perspective, that looks at things from different angles and different experiences and different worldviews, then the answers we're going to get from AI are going to be limited as well. And then that the results of that, I think, are even more exponential in terms of their negative impact or their negative consequences if there isn't that greater understanding. And so I love that that's part of your business and the importance of creating more of that, more people with that are providing or that written word or authoring books or bringing in information that maybe wouldn't otherwise be there.
And when that's the why, you asked me why I created the business and to be abundant, to have abundant mindset about that rather than a scarcity mindset, right? We're not competing with one another. We're just, how do we get more perspectives in there? And then the what of what we do is we create these learning experiences. They're live learning experiences. They're either in person or they're virtual. That's the bulk of our work right now. Eventually, I want to take the 7 forms of respect into license the content and do train the trainer. That's my North Star, to be like Franklin Covey, so that people can one day talk about forms of respect the way we talk about love languages, right? Instead of saying, hey, what are your forms of respect? These are mine. And that we're assuming that we respect one another. We actually come from this place of assuming that we do. And that maybe we just have different ideas of what that looks like. And how do we talk about it with curiosity? So when we work with the majority of our clients are government and nonprofits, as well as private sector company industries that are more relational, that they understand relationships are important, which is interestingly enough, even though I spent many years in tech, I don't actually work with that many tech companies because tech companies tend to be actually more transactional in their nature.
In how they're approaching their people.
Yeah, exactly. And even just like, oh, this is the roadmap. This is how, and so it's just, and so we work with organizations not with individuals that understand that people stay in their jobs if they like the people they work with. People will leave jobs they love if they don't like the people they work with, and people will stay in jobs they're like, eh, if they like the people they work with. And so that relationship building is really important. And also that we help organizations continue to be learning organizations, because oftentimes work is seen as, oh, you go to work and you provide this labor, this service. And that can feel very extractive. And imagine if we've got organizations that are, no, you're going to continue your learning here. You're going to continue your learning and your development here. And so that it creates this, it's not that we're just extracting labor from you. We're actually giving you something too, and we're building something together.
And I have to say, from a neuroscience and neuroperformance perspective, I love that, right? Because we are essentially a combination of different neural networks that have been forming and connecting all throughout our lives and through our different experiences. And organizations that see humans as this complex, adaptive human being that can continue to grow and change and bring more value are going to be more likely to be able to take advantage of the benefits of that as well. And I love this. I want to get into your 7 forms of respect, because this is a little bit of a personal passion of mine. One of the last things I did before I left the corporate space was roll out a respectful workplace initiative. Is probably the wrong word, but we did real company-wide training. And what did the guideline look like? And one of the things we learned that kind of speaks to what you were talking about in terms of different people having different definitions of respect is that when we went through scenarios, so we did practice with different scenarios, people were really had very different opinions about what was and wasn't respectful. And one of the things we kept coming back to is we can have different definitions of and beliefs about the world and what's right and what's not right and which political parties are right or which religions. We can each have our own perspectives. And when we come together in the workplace, we can understand what those are and learn how to be respectful of one another, even if we don't respect the opinion. So even if we disagree with and don't respect someone's opinion, we can still learn how to be respectful in our interactions with one another. And so I just really love that there's these different types and this curiosity of understanding what those are. So tell us a little bit more about these seven forms of respect and maybe what they are and how they work. Give us a little bit more about that.
So the seven forms of respect, here's a bookmark. And so we use this acronym PICA, P-I-C-A-A, and it stands for procedure, punctuality, information, candor, consideration, acknowledgement, and attention. On each of these, there are different behaviors, actions that are associated with them. And it's really important to think of this more as the five love languages and not like seven habits of highly effective people. And I think that, and so in the seven forms of respect, we argue that respect is dynamic, it's relative, it's subjective, and it's contradictory. And it's contradictory because we as humans are contradictory. We say things and we don't do them, right? That happens all the time. Does that make us bad people? It just makes us human. And yet the way we talk about respect, we talk about it as if it's fixed and as if it's universal. So Jessica, I could say, I need you to respect me. And you could say, Julie, I am respecting you. And we go back and forth and we act as if we think that we mean the same thing. And so actually we can agree on what respect feels like. What we disagree is what does respect look like? And so that's the premise of the framework that, hey, let's practice curiosity and try to understand. And also in the workplace, though, I do think in the workplace, respect lives in layers. And so it's, and so the analogy I like to use is that of language. So just imagine here's the organization, here's a company. And then usually it's the leadership that will, the CEO that will, that models what the norms are. And they, and people, it's about what they do, not what they say they do, but what they do. Mm-hmm. And so we think of that as the national language. Those particular forms of respect, I used to, first time I was in corporate tech, oh my gosh, candor was very big. Sometimes you'd go into meetings and you thought people were yelling at each other. And acknowledgement was really big too. There was constant emojis, high fives, yay, amazing. Information was really big because people are constantly CC'd on everything. What was not prioritized was punctuality because people were triple booked to meetings. There's no way you could actually be on time. Attention was not prioritized because people multitasked and it was considered just a sign of performance. All right, so that's the national language. And then there are the individual departments. You think about finance, engineering, marketing, operations, customer service. They all have their own team leads and they have a certain nature of the work as well as just the personality of the person who's heading that department. So I think of the ones, what is the forms of respect that they prioritize in those departments as being the regional dialects. And then there's me, the individual. And I have my own preferences too. I have my own preferences and priorities. And so it's, and people who are successful in org can go and they're multilingual, right? They can go to different departments. They can flex. And it's really important for organizations to understand what we prioritize and what we don't prioritize and why. Because it's okay. We actually really strongly advocate it's not about getting all seven. It's about knowing what are the top two to three that you prioritize and why, and what happens when you don't do those things. And that way, when I as an individual contributor goes to work and I can say, I personally like this, but I know that in this department, I'm not going to get that because of the nature of the work. And that's clearly communicated to me. And it's not, and also to help leaders understand, hey, people are right now, typically they do what the leader likes. And that's not necessarily what's best for the company. So how do we take a step back and go, huh? So for example, if you are in an arts organization and yet, let's say punctuality is super important to me. Like we need to have these very aggressive deadlines and there can be a sense of urgency too. Yet in arts, that's not urgent as they are. We're not losing lives. Like, lives are not. And so it's about understanding what's the nature of the work as well, so that we're not exhausting ourselves trying to get all seven. We actually are able to say, these are the ones we prioritize in this setting and then in this setting, and why. And that way, as an individual, I can say, oh, even though I personally don't like that, I'm willing, because I care about the mission and our shared work, I'm willing to be okay with what we are prioritizing as a group.
So how do you go about, you gave some really great examples of different workplaces or different groups having different focuses in terms of respect, what it means to be respectful in those groups. Do you have an assessment? Is that just a conversation that people have? How do you identify, you compare it to the love languages? So that makes me think of, okay, what's my number one and two love language? Is it similar when it comes to these seven forms of respect? Each individual kind of has two or three preferences or that are their top, or how do you go about doing that?
Yes. And yet it's still dynamic. And so I'll answer your first question of how do we help the teams? And then I'll get to the second one of how we help determine it for the individual. So the first one, how do we help determine it for the team, is we actually will take, when we work with teams, we'll do a survey, a real-time survey. Hey, what are the forms of respect do you think, the top ranked existing forms of respect that are practiced here? And that might be on the exec team, that might be in the organization. And then we'll have a discussion about it. It's like, okay, this is what we're seeing. And it also shows, oh, some people are experiencing something else, right? They think that maybe there could be a majority of people who are around three forms of respect. And yet there's some other people like, no, I thought some others. And so it shows the difference in our experiences. And then the second question we'll ask is, what's the nature of the work? What's your, not just the mission, but the nature of the work, right? And then we ask the question again in another way. We ask, so considering the nature of the work, what are the top three forms of respect you think you should practice together in this group or in this department that align with that nature of the work? And maybe you're already doing some of them and maybe you're not. And then we have a discussion about what do we need to do if there's a huge discrepancy or if there's already alignment, we'll talk about that. And I usually don't show the polls until after we've had both the discussions, so they can't be influenced. And then we'll then have a discussion. Then we'll discuss about what work it takes to do each of those forms, because each form takes work. It's hard. It's not, it goes beyond just saying, oh, we need to give each other feedback. It's hard. We actually had one, I worked with one team where the CEO was like, oh yes, I'm all about candor, all about giving feedback. So we actually took them through an exercise of doing that. He could not do it. Jessica, here's the CEO. I'm all about candor. He could not give constructive feedback. So it gets at, and then he also told me half my team is angry about this exercise. And it was like, all right, I think it just shows that you say that you want it and yet it's hard. So answering the first question is, how do we help diagnose this for teams? And then the second question of how we diagnose it for ourselves. Yes, we have a quiz, we have an assessment. And yet at the same time, we also, it's super fluid. So we think of this not like Myers-Briggs or Enneagram or DISC. It's actually much more fluid because it depends on the context. And so I talk about how respect is dynamic because of three dimensions. The first is hierarchy. So power dynamics. What I'm going to expect from someone who's my supervisor will be different from someone who's my peer and someone who reports to me. And even if I'm a solopreneur, the way I treat a vendor and the way I treat a customer, it's going to be different. And it's not good or bad. I think of hierarchy as providing order. The second dimension is what we call give versus get. And that's the way we like to give respect can actually be different from the way we like to get respect. And that could also depend on the power dynamic, right? So for example, I really want to get constructive feedback from my supervisor. I don't really like it maybe so much when I get it from my peer. And it's different for everyone, but it's more about recognizing that. And then the third dimension, and this is the trickiest, this is the one that actually requires the most self-awareness. What matters to you? What actually matters to you versus what should matter to you? Because we've all been socialized to think, oh, this is respectful, and this is what I should get, and this is what I should give. And yet we don't ask ourselves, what actually matters to me so much? I will do it even if it doesn't matter to the other person. because it's actually more about me. So for me, punctuality is really important to me. And so I will tell friends, even though in meetings, if I know I'm going to be 5 minutes late, even if I know that person tends to run late, I will still tell them because it's not about them. It's about me. Mm-hmm. And also in the inverse is sometimes it can be hard to admit what we want, right? So it took me quite a while to admit that acknowledgement is important to me because it felt cringy. I was like, I don't want to say it. And yet our body will reveal to us what is true.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right?
We'll feel it. We'll feel this discomfort. We'll think about it. It's just, and even if we say it's not a big deal, not a big deal. And yet inside, we know that's not the truth for us.
And it makes me think, so it's interesting you use the example of punctuality, because as somebody with neurodiversity, ADHD, punctuality is super hard for me. I will run over on something because I'm super passionate about it, or I'm in the flow, or things like that. And so when I know it's really important to somebody, I will make it more of a point out of respect. Mm-hmm. And also it gets to the importance of clarity and of having those conversations so that people understand the different people that they're working with and the ways that they're navigating that respect, or their ways of being, that self-awareness of what are my ways of being and how are those different from your ways of being, the way that you're wired up and the way that you're responding, so that we can create that respect for one another. So it makes me think, as you're talking about it, it makes me think about what are some of the challenges that organizations or individuals, you could do both, face when they're not doing this well. So what are some of the things that organizations are struggling with, or companies are struggling with, that have them say, we need to do this work? This is important. Mm-hmm. Arguably, it would be important for every organization, so I'm not suggesting it's not. Mm-hmm. But just what are some of those like really real pain points that get workplaces to bring you in?
Oh gosh, miscommunication. Miscommunication is really, and different expectations. And oftentimes there are generational differences or the departmental differences. And because people are working more remote, that the miscommunication really becomes aggravated. And so that's where people will bring us in. It's just, hey, we think that we've lost something since the pandemic, and or we've grown a lot. That's another, like, we've grown a lot. There are a lot of people who don't know each other. Mm. There's been a lot of turnover. Maybe it's not necessarily growth, but just new people. And so we just need to get some common language. And it's also, I think there's the first part is the what. What's actually more important is the why. And to explain, why is this important to us? Why do we prioritize this one over other ones? And I think one of the mistakes that companies make is thinking that belonging means that you have to make everyone happy.
Mm-hmm. So, tell me more about that.
Just because you didn't get what you want doesn't mean you weren't heard. Just because you didn't get what you want doesn't mean you weren't heard. And so I think that now there's so much pressure to create these spaces of belonging and inclusion, and that there can be this mistake of thinking, oh, belonging means that I'm happy all the time. And belonging means that I get what I want. When I express, you've asked my opinion, and why didn't I get it? So that means you don't really care. And yet what we know is you will never make any group of people happy all at the same time. And this is where actually leadership needs to be more clear. So one of the things when we poll organizations is we'll ask, hey, what causes misalignment around respect in this organization? And so often I've seen, depending on the organizations, often departmental differences, sometimes it's generational differences, could be also lack of clarity from leadership. What's interesting is it tends to be ranked the lowest, working remotely. That is not as big of a deal as people think it is. And yet I think it's an easy target. Oh, if we were just together, everything would be perfect. Just, no, you still need to communicate whether you are in person or remote. It just makes it more obvious when we're remote. And so in any case, I think it's companies bring us in when they are facing the miscommunication challenges. And at the same time, I can't work with toxic, broken companies where the leaders don't feel that they have anything to learn. That's another thing too. Just like five love languages can't help abusive relationships. Seven forms of respect cannot help toxic workplaces. And so I really, because it really is for people who, hey, we're things are a little crunchy right now, but we do want to learn. We do want to get better. And there are a lot of organizations that are there that, and so we try to help them before they go into a toxic zone. And because in all of this learning and development space, there are some companies that are really good at toxic zone. That's not where we're at.
I love that you talk about belonging there. And one of the things that comes to mind is when we talk about it from a neuroscience and neural network perspective, our gut brain is really responsible for core identity, for the core of who we are, as well as safety or self-preservation and mobilization, taking action. And so what it makes me think of is when people feel like they belong, it's because they feel like they can show up as their core identity and be heard and seen without being punished, without mm-hmm. something bad happening to them as a result of that. And so I like that you distinguish or that you say it's not about making you happy, but it's about giving you the ability to be seen and heard without us then without there being negative consequences. Mm-hmm. Because when somebody shows up as their identity, they show up as who they are, they provide their perspective to be seen and heard. And then the response is, okay, now you're not going to get that promotion, or now you're being penalized for expressing your opinion or perspective on that project, or for bringing to light a challenge that's going on in the organization, then they're going to shut down. Then they're going to move into that self-protection, and they're going to be less likely to take action. And that's where you start to feel that lack of belonging. So if you can create an environment where there's that sufficient level of respect that people can be seen and heard with a recognition that belonging doesn't mean happy. It doesn't mean that because you've expressed that opinion, it's going to change something, or it's mm-hmm. going to necessarily be what happens, but that you feel safe enough that you can do that without it affecting you negatively.
Yeah, there's this difference between being happy and not being penalized. And also, I think that we have actually we belong to multiple identities, cultures, and communities at the same time. And so who I choose to be at work might not be who I choose to be at home. There might be differences, like different aspects of even the way I talk to my brothers will be different from the way I talk to what I talk about with my brothers is different from what I talk about with my friends versus what I talk about with my coworkers. And so it's actually, I have what I call the rubber band rule. And I think that this is, so when I started doing this research, I would ask people first, how do you want to be treated at work? And they would say with respect. And then I'd say, what does respect look like? And they would say the golden rule. Treat people the way you want to be treated. Now, Jessica, that issue with the golden rule is, what if they don't want to be treated the way you want to be treated? And then they would talk about then there's the platinum rule. Do you know the platinum rule?
No, I have not heard the platinum rule.
Treat people the way they want to be treated. Now, the thing about the platinum rule is, what if you don't want to treat them the way they want to be treated? Right? Oh, do I sacrifice myself to make them happy? And then there's what I call the rubber band rule. So I've got this rubber band here. And what it shows is we as humans are able to flex. So we're able to stretch. It's like, I want to show respect to Jessica. And even though I'm ambivalent, I'll do it. I don't really like that, but I'll do it. And then in workplaces, sometimes, and in any Ashley group, sometimes we're stretching because we're trying to accommodate other people and be respectful, right? Like, I want to show them and I want to make them happy. What happens? We snap and break when we're stretching ourselves too much. And so with the rubber band rule, it's about knowing, what are my personal breaking points? What's going to make me snap? How do I articulate that? How do I know that for myself? Because oftentimes people don't even know what it is for themselves. We just expect other people to know, but we haven't even said it ourselves. And so I think in a workplace, we're all going to be stretching a bit. That's at the end of the day. But it's okay. Ooh, I'm stretching way too much here all the time. I have to get out. And it's not that this place is a bad place. It's not the right, I'm stretching way too much. Other people don't have to stretch as much. And so there's that balance.
I think that's so impactful too, because I think you're hitting on that different environments may be right for you versus others, right? So there may be some workplaces that align well with my values, my identity, who I am. And others may not, right? Other organizations may not be as good of a fit, may cause us, I love that, to stretch too much and ultimately snap. And I want to maybe hit on a little bit that I talked about the gut brain and the gut identity, or the neural networks in our gut being our core identity. And that's really separate from what's part of the neural networks in our heart, which are our emotions, what we find important, and how we relate to other people. And so how we feel is not necessarily the same thing. So when I think of belonging, and I always like this as an exercise, if you're a person who's struggling with belonging, to ask yourself if after you've expressed yourself, after you've shown up as yourself, do you feel the hurt, or do you feel the response in your gut, or do you feel it in your heart? Mm. Because we may feel hurt or sad that someone doesn't accept our perspective or opinion. There may be feelings associated with that. But when there's a safety issue, when it's that I'm not going to get a promotion, or now I am blacklisted and they're not going to come to me again, that's a gut reaction. Mm. And so if you can feel where it's coming from, it may help you with what's the root of the issue. Is it really respect, which I think to me is more in the gut, is more in a, am I safe? Am I safe mm-hmm. to show up in this environment? And like you said, can I bend but not break in terms of the rubber band? Can I show up? And even if I'm showing up differently for what I'm doing and when I'm working with someone versus with my spouse or my family member, there's still a core part of me mm-hmm. that remains unchanged, right? Mm-hmm. There's still those core elements as who I am. And if I'm clear on what those things are that are really important to me, and when bending too far is going to cause me to break, that's going to allow me to stay secure in mm-hmm. that knowingness, right? In that space.
Yeah, because it also gives people a sense of control. Oh, I actually have a bit of control over this too. My control is actually being able to my own self-awareness and knowledge of what is going to make me break versus just letting other people decide that for me. And so even with, I actually differentiate between disrespect and lack of respect.
Oh, okay. Let's
and so let me hear that. Oftentimes when people don't get respect in the ways that matter to them, they will say, I've been disrespected. And I think of disrespect as intentional. So Jessica, I know you didn't like it. And I did it anyway, right? That's disrespect. Lack of respect is, Jessica, I didn't know that mattered to you. And maybe you actually told me it wasn't a big deal over and over again. And so that's lack of respect in the forms that matter to you versus disrespect. And so sometimes it's just pausing and going, wait a minute, is this disrespect or is this lack of respect? Or I don't know, which means I have to go and find out. Like, hey, did you hear me when I said that? Did you get that email that said I really like it this way? Oh, you didn't? Oh, okay. So then that's lack of respect. Oh, you did, and you did it anyway. And so oftentimes with some forms of respect, it's really just a practice in curiosity. And that's my core work, right? It's a practice in curiosity. And we think of curiosity as a practice. It's oftentimes we talk about curiosity as if it's a personality trait. It's something you have or you don't have. I actually think of it as something that we do. And there's sometimes we don't want to do it. We don't want to practice curiosity. I do not want to learn from that person. I do not want to understand that person. I want to be understood. I want them to learn from me. I don't care about learning from them. And this practice of curiosity has three elements. The first is self-awareness. How do I be curious about myself? How do I want to be respected and why? The second is relationship building. How do I get curious about other people and let them get curious about me so that there's reciprocity? So Jessica, not only am I asking about you, I'm sharing me with you so that we have this back and forth. And that first one is inward curiosity. And the second one is outward curiosity with inward curiosity. We have to have both. And the third element is this clear communication. How do we listen to understand? How do we ask questions when we don't understand? And how do we tell stories? Because I think that's oftentimes people really focus on the what. This is what we should be doing. This is what is respectful. This is what I want. And we don't talk about why does it matter? And people will remember stories. I mentioned punctuality is important to me. And that's because growing up, my mom was always late picking me up from school. And the school staff had to wait with me. And I felt a lot of shame around that. And I felt anxiety. Literally, I'd be like, is that car my mom's? Is that my mom's car? And there's still this part that kind of comes out. I literally feel anxiety. And when I share that story with people, they can understand I'm not being rigid. But we have to actually know that story for ourselves, because sometimes we've never even asked ourselves that story. We're just like, no, punctuality is the right thing to do.
And I love that one of the ways that we talk about exactly that scenario or exactly that kind of example is that often especially in the workplace, we stop at the level of behavior. So there's like an action or a result that happens and it's because of a behavior. Like being on time is really important. That would be a behavior, right? I'm always on time. And we don't drop below the surface of kind of the iceberg, right? To get below to what are the thoughts, the feelings, the emotions that are creating that behavior. And then we like to go one step deeper, which is what is rooted in our neurophysiology, what is rooted into our ways of being, into our bodies, that actually causes a reaction that's triggering that. Mm-hmm. And almost always that is the case. Almost always that there is this deep rooted element of something from our lives, from our upbringing, from our experiences, from how our neural networks wired together that is triggering that sequence of events and getting to that outcome. And I'm a big proponent of self-awareness. So I love that that's a key part of it. And I think that when you get into that curiosity and that understanding of what is it that I want, what's important to me, those neural networks in our heart brain, what's important to me, and what's important to those I want to connect with, those I want to have relationships with. And understanding that's at the root of then having the respect. If I can understand what I want and need and what others want and need and create that, then we're going to get along much more effectively than we would if we don't. And I love that sometimes you got to get to that story to understand why someone places importance on something. Why is this so important to them when it may not be to someone else?
And it is truly a practice, because when we do workshops with people, that first time we ask people, because it's important, why is it important to you? Why does it matter? Because it is, because it's respectful, right? And it takes quite a while. And sometimes it takes other people sharing their stories. Oh, wow, that just sparked something in me that helped me hear, think about my own life in a different way. Because it is, you can't just expect people to be self-aware. Oh, be self-aware. No, it's actually a practice and it involves other people too. And we all have to, if we want other people to be self-aware, sometimes we have to engage in that conversation that they will actually help us become more self-aware.
And one of the things I always point to is there's the Harvard study that 95% of people think they're self-aware while only 15% actually are.
I love that study.
And when we talk about self-awareness, one of the things is I created a course recently around embodied self-awareness. And one of the things I came to as I was creating that was that you never achieve self-awareness, because self-awareness really only occurs in the present. So I am either mastering self-awareness in this moment, but that doesn't mean I'm going to master it 5 minutes from now, a day from now, 2 days from now, because we're constantly being impacted by the experiences around us. And we're being pulled into and out of a level of self-awareness based upon those interactions and those experiences. And they're all impacting us, which is why I love that you say that self-awareness has to be a practice. And it has to be something that we're constantly doing in order to create the relationships, the outcomes, to live our lives more free the way that we would want to be.
Yes. And for me, it's when I learn something about myself, it's like, oh, I can still surprise myself. And that it's not this destination. Oh, here we are at self-awareness. No, I'm constantly learning new things about myself in relationship with other people.
One of my favorite examples, and I think this speaks a little bit to the respect piece too, is that last week, I'll give you a recent one. Last week, I had a plan to go away for 2 days to do some business planning, strategic planning work with my partners in my business. And my daughter, I woke up that morning and my daughter was throwing up and with a high fever and sick, and that destroyed the plans to go away. Mm-hmm. And my partner in the business, she said to me, this is just reality. We have to work through it. And when she said that, I wanted to punch her in the face. I was like so angry. I was like, I don't want this to be reality. I wanted to fight her. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. That was a lot of anger. And I went, okay, no, I'm not really angry at her. She's right. And I moved to, no, I'm just really disappointed. I'm really sad that we're not going to get to go away to do this. And then ultimately we got to, okay, this is actually helpful. This helps us to see what our business really does. And there's wisdom in the experience itself, and to lean into that experience and what it had to teach us and what we had to learn from it. And then how we could navigate that as a team. But in my past, I might've let that derail my entire day. I might not have let that hurt my relationship with my husband, because I would have been so angry and frustrated. But I think to me, that's a great example of where the more we practice it in our lives, the better the results are, especially in our relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it truly is a practice. I had something where I had a client ask me for something, and I made this assumption about what they were asking for. And I felt really, I was upset. I can't believe it. And I even sent back a slightly trying to, I don't want to do this. And then I talked to a friend about it, and I was just, what do you think? This is happening. And she just said, why don't you just ask them what they mean? And I'm like, oh, of course. Ask a question. Right. Of course. And I went back, and Jessica, it was a totally reasonable request, but I had jumped to these assumptions of what they were asking for. And so it shows, yes, we're always needing to practice, and it can be so helpful when we practice with other people, when we just say, hey, I think that there's a difference between asking for validation. Oh, I just want to be heard. I want you to comfort me. And no, I want you to help me see something that I think I'm stuck here. Can you help me see something?
Mm-hmm. And I, what I love about that, and what I think is really the way I like to look at it, is we're these neural networks, right? We're these complex human beings with all these different ways of being and experiences that we've had. And so it's almost inevitable that we're going to clash with one another, and that mm-hmm. we're going to create these different sensations and reactions and experiences between each other, because we're not two stagnant operating systems like computers that we can predict what they're going to do when they interact with one another. We're way more complicated than that. And I think it's honoring that complexity, and especially I think that's why I love your curiosity and respect, honoring the complexity of our human experience in the context of staying curious about those that we're interacting with, and then learning and understanding how they view and experience the world through a lens of respect, whether that's their past experience, their current experience, but looking at it through that lens of respect to understand what's important to them, what's important to me, and how do we create a better interaction or a better system or series of ways of communicating, so that we can reduce the friction, so that mm-hmm. we can create more streamlined workplaces. And I think you talked about some of the pains that people get into in workplaces. When I asked that earlier, workplaces, it's the drag on the workplace. It's the thing, it's those conflicts and those conflicting perspectives that are going to slow down the productivity and getting things accomplished and getting to the results that you want to get accomplished. So taking the time to be curious and learn and understand these things is actually going to create a much more productive and effective workforce, rather than waiting until there's a lot of complexity or problems or challenges, right?
Yes. And that's why we love the work that we do. And the clients that we work with, they want to have that. And it's just, oh, and even in that, like, they want to have that. And they also know that they can use some coaching on how to get there too.
And I love that you brought up coaching, because what I always say is that when things are working well, when we're all aligned and everything's working well, it's easy to make decisions. It's easy to interact with people. And when we're stuck, when there's conflict, when things aren't working right, that's when we really need a coach. We need someone else to come in to help us see what we can't see because we're too deep in it ourselves. And that just brings so, so much value. So I love the work that you're doing. I love your 7 forms of respect. Tell me, as we're wrapping up this episode, what would you want our audience to know? What do you want to leave them with? What do you want what are the words of wisdom or insights or advice that you have for them around this topic or just in general?
I think just to practice curiosity around respect, and practice curiosity, not just about other people, but also about ourselves. Think about, ooh, am I being stretched too much here? What are my breaking points? So that's what I'd like to leave people with.
And if organizations want to get in touch with you, if they are like, yes, I want to figure out how I can do these 7 forms of respect, what is the best way for them to get started or get in touch with you?
So you can, we have a curiosity based, that's BASED.com, our website there. And then we also have a forms of respect website as well. And you can get a mini book, you can get a free quiz. There's even a free digital course so you can learn about it. I'm very active on LinkedIn. So please just connect with me on LinkedIn as well. And I would just love to chat with any organizations that can see this framework as a way to help who appreciate that communication is dynamic, learning is dynamic. And yes, it'd be great to be in touch.
I love it. I can't recommend it enough, because I can't wait to get on that website and download and check it out, because I think it's so powerful. I love the work that you're doing. Thank you so much for coming on today. You've been a phenomenal guest. To all of our listeners, I just want to leave this final thought around respect and how often in our world today, there's either a lack of respect or actual disrespect, where people are in conflict, arguing, not listening and understanding one another. And what a gift it would be to your organization, to yourself, to your relationships, to understand not only your forms of respect, but those of others, so that you can better interact and respect not only your boundaries, not only your ways of being, but also those of the people that you interact with and work with. And just to take the time to do that, just to take the time to create that self-awareness for yourself. So as always, I want to remind our listeners to just always keep growing, keep evolving, keep looking for those opportunities to rewire your neural pathways so that you can have more exceptional experiences on your life journey. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and we'll be back again next week with another episode.